Chapter 36, Wage, Price, Flexibility and Employment. Page 286. Introduction. In the chapter on the classical theory of employment, it was observed that the classicists advocated a reduction in money wages to achieve full employment in the economy. Keynes was against wage cutting and argued for increase in effective demand to remove unemployment. In this chapter, we discuss in detail the classical and the Keynesian views on the relationship between wages and employment. The classical view. The classical economists believed that there was always full employment in the economy. In case of unemployment, a general cut in money wages would take the economy to full employment level. Their argument runs as follows. In a competitive economy, when money wages are reduced, they lead to reduction in cost of production and consequently to lower prices of products. When prices fall, demand for products will increase and sales will be pushed up. Increased sales will necessitate the employment of more labor and ultimately full employment will be attained. The classical view is also based on the assumption that changes in money wages are related directly and proportionately to real wages. So when the money wage rate is reduced, the real wage is also reduced to the same extent. Consequently, unemployment is reduced and full employment prevails. But it is at the equality of demand and supply of labor at a particular wage rate that full employment is achieved. The demand for labor is a decreasing function of the real wage rate. If W is the money wage rate, P is the price of the product, and MP is the marginal product of labor, we have W is equal to P multiplied by MP, or W upon P is equal to MP. Since MP declines as employment increases, it follows that the level of employment increases as the real wage W upon P declines. The downward sloping demand curve for labor D is shown in figure 1A. So in figure 1, panel A, we have the demand curve D, which is a downward sloping curve, and a supply curve, which is an upward rising curve as we move towards the right. We have N on the x-axis and real wage up on the y-axis. The point where these two meet is E. It corresponds to W by P on the y-axis and NF on the x-axis. If we consider another point N1, which is lower than NF, then this meets the demand curve at small d, and the real wage is W upon P1. Corresponding to that, the point on the supply curve is small s. If we extend this figure to panel B, then corresponding to N1 and F, there are two points on the P curve, which is a slightly rising curve. So the points are E1 and E, corresponding to N1 and F. Then income, which is on the y-axis, corresponding to E1 is Y1, and corresponding to E is YF. Then in the panel C, we have the IS curve, which is a downward sloping curve as we move towards the right, and LM curve, which is an upward rising curve. So there are LM at P0, and a slightly higher curve is LM at P1. LM curve intersecting IS curve at point E, corresponding to income YF, which is on the x-axis, and the rate of interest RF, which is on the y-axis. The IS curve intersects LM P1 at E1, corresponding to income Y1, and corresponding to the rate of interest R1. So that is figure 1 in panels A, B and C. So returning to the text, the supply of labor is assumed as an increasing function of the real wage. This is shown by the upward sloping S curve in the figure. This curve indicates that the rise in real wage will induce more workers to offer themselves for employment. The interaction of S and D curves at point E shows the full employment level NF at the real wage W upon P. If the real wage is maintained at a higher level W by P1, there is excess supply of labor by DS and N1 F1 labor is unemployed. It is only when the wage rate is reduced to W upon P that unemployment disappears and the level of full employment NF is attained. Given the stock of capital equipment, technological knowledge, and supplies of natural resources, a specific relation exists between the level of national income or output and employment. National income is an increasing function of the number of workers. The relation between national income and employment is indicated by the curve OP in panel B of the figure. The level of income YF corresponds to the full employment level NF of panel A in the same figure. As employment increases, the OP curve flattens out, which implies that the national income increases less than in proportion to the increase in employment due to the operation of the laws of diminishing returns. In panel C of figure 1, the equilibrium of the product and money markets of the economy is depicted in terms of IS and LM curves. Taking full employment level of income YF of panel B, the IS and LM P0 curves intersect at point E and the interest rate is RF. Page 287. In the classical theory of employment, the price level is a variable. A change in the price level will affect the demand for money for transactions purposes. Hence, it will change the position of the LM curve. Suppose the initial price level is P0, which gives equilibrium interest rate RF and income YF in panel C. Now, the price level increases to P1 above the full employment level P0. It reduces the real money supply and shifts the LM curve to the left to LM P1. The new equilibrium point is E1 with R1-Y1 combination of interest rate and income level. With flexible prices and wages, the price level tends to settle at P0, thereby establishing full employment. To illustrate the mechanism by which the full employment equilibrium is attained, suppose the real wages W upon P1 and employment N1 in panel A. The level of income corresponding to this level of employment is Y1 in panel B, and the price level corresponding to this income level is P1 as represented by the LM P1 curve in panel C. At the real wage rate W upon P1, the supply of labor exceeds the demand for labor by DS. It means that N1 NF workers are unemployed, who will bid down the money wage in order to obtain employment. As the money wage falls, cost of production and prices of products fall. As wages and prices fall, the amount of money needed for transactions purposes is reduced. Thus, the supply of money exceeds the demand for money at the prevalent interest rate R1. The excess money supply shifts the curve from LM P1 rightward to LM P0. As a result, equilibrium is established at E when the economy attains the level of income YF and interest rate RF in panel C, and employment reaches full employment level NF at the real wage rate W upon P in panel A. Keynes's criticisms of the classical view. Keynes did not accept the classical view that a reduction in money wages led to full employment. He emphasized that unemployment could be removed by raising effective demand. His main objections to the classical view were as follows. 1. Not applicable to economy. The classical view that cut in money wages tends to increase employment is based on the partial equilibrium analysis. It is applicable to an industry, but if applied to the economy as a whole, it reduces employment rather than increasing it. According to Keynes, when money wages are reduced in the economy, they will reduce money incomes of the workers, who will reduce the demand for products. Total outlay will fall and lead to a decline in effective demand and employment. Thus, the main defect in the classical view was the failure to recognize the dual nature of wages as costs and incomes. The classicists only considered the cost aspect and neglected the income aspect. 2. No need for cut in money wages. Keynes did not agree with the classical view that reduction in money wages was essential to achieve full employment. According to him, full employment could be attained through monetary and fiscal policies by keeping the money wage rate constant. 3. Inverse relation between money and real wages. As against the classical view that the relation between money wages and real wages is direct and proportional, Keynes pointed out that the relation between the two is inverse. According to him, when money wages are reduced, real wages rise. This is because a fall in money wages will lead to a more than proportionate fall in prices. When prices fall, real wages rise because of the increase in the value of money. Thus, it is not possible for real wage to fall with a reduction in the money wage rate. Hence, the entire classical argument based on the wrong relation between money wage and real wage falls down, and it is not possible to achieve full employment by reduction in money wages. 4. Decline in outlay, demand and prices. As a corollary to the above, since a cut in money wages will not lead to a reduction in real wages, Keynes believed that a reduction in money wages would lead to a proportionate decline in total outlay, demand and prices, leaving real wages intact. Page 288. 5. Cut in real wages via increase in prices. Keynes agreed with the classical view that employment could be increased by a reduction in real wages. But the reduction in real wages was to be brought about not by a cut in money wages as the classicals believed, but by an increase in the price level. According to Keynes, an increase in aggregate demand, keeping money wages constant, would raise output, costs and prices after some time. This may happen due to three factors. 1. Diminishing returns may operate in the short run. 2. Workers may demand higher wages when their demand increases due to powerful trade unions. And 3. Bottlenecks may appear in production in the form of non-availability of a machine, equipment, raw material, transport facilities, etc. All these factors tend to raise the cost of production and hence prices. As a result, real wages fall. Thus, Keynes believed that cut in real wages increased employment, but not via reduction in money wages. 6. Cut in money wages impractical. Keynes further objected to a cut in money wages on practical grounds. According to him, in democratic countries where collective bargaining is permissible under the law, workers strongly resist any cut in their money wages rates. 7. Social justice. Social justice also demands that money wages of workers alone should not be reduced. A cut in money wages of workers, keeping the incomes of other classes as unchanged, would raise the standard of living of the latter relative to the workers. Keynes therefore regarded a policy of increasing the supply of money in time of depression preferable to cutting wages. The Keynesian view. Keynes started his views about the relationship between wages and employment by accepting the classical postulates that both the law of diminishing returns and the theory of marginal productivity operated. Since every worker is paid the wage equal to the marginal product and the law of diminishing returns operates in industry, real wages must decline for employment to increase. But this does not mean that unemployment was due to the refusal of workers to accept wages equal to their marginal product. According to Keynes, unemployment resulted from the lack of aggregate demand. It is demand that determines unemployment, and employment determines the real wage rate, not the other way round. In order to establish this, Keynes brought out the distinction between money wages and real wages. Keynes pointed out that the relation between the two is inverse. When money wages are reduced, real wages rise. This is because a fall in money wages will lead to a more than proportionate fall in prices. When prices fall, real wages rise because of the increase in the value of money. A fall in prices will reduce aggregate demand, output, income and employment. A cut in money wages will therefore reduce prices and depress aggregate demand and hence employment. Like the classicists, Keynes believed that employment varies inversely with real wages. The quantity of labor demanded increases as real wages fall. but Keynes denied that a cut in money wages for the economy as a whole would necessarily lead to a cut in real wages. He believed that a reduction in money wages would lead to a proportional decline in the total outlay, demand, and prices, leaving real wages intact. To increase employment, aggregate demand should be raised while holding money wages substantially constant. Aggregate demand could be increased through monetary and fiscal policy, and money wages could be held fairly stable under modern collective bargaining practices. Thus, an increase in aggregate demand, keeping money wages constant, will increase output, costs, and hence prices. Consequently, real wages will fall. Keynes argued that workers are prepared to work at the current money wage rate, even if their real wage rates are lowered by increase in prices. This is because of the existence of money illusion in the labor market. They will permit their real wages to be reduced by price rises without leaving the market. This is explained in Figure 2. So in Figure 2, we have employment on the x-axis and real wage on the y-axis. There are two SL curves, SL and SL1, and one demand curve, DL. SL1 is lower than SL. Point where SL and DL meet is A. Corresponding to A, employment is N1 and real wage is W upon P. So if the curve moves downwards to SL1, it intersects the demand curve at B, corresponding to real wage W upon P1, and the employment is NF. Returning to the text. In the figure, employment is measured on the horizontal axis and the real wage rate on the vertical axis. DL is the demand for labor curve and SL is the supply of labor curve. The slope of the labor supply curve is flat up to a range and then it slopes upwards to the right. It signifies that in the flat segment, any number of workers up to NF level are willing to work at the prevailing money wage rate W to which they have become accustomed. So if their real wages are reduced, they will be prepared to work under the money illusion. That is, their money wages are the same even though the price level has risen. Thus, up to full employment level NF, more workers can be employed at the same money wage rate. But beyond NF, workers would demand higher wages to supply labor. That is why the labor supply curve bends upwards. Page 289. In Figure 2, at W upon P wage rate, N1 workers are employed when DL and SL curves cut at point A. This is the Keynesian underemployment equilibrium. At this wage level, N1 minus NF workers remain involuntary unemployed. When the price level rises to P1 level, the real wage rate is lowered to W upon P1 and the labor supply curve shifts downwards without the workers noticing it due to money illusion. At this wage rate, the new equilibrium is established at point B, where the demand for labor on the part of firms DL equals the supply of labor SL1, which workers are willing to offer at the same money wage rate W. Thus, there is full employment of labor at NF level. The main difference between the classical and the Keynesian propositions about cut in real wages lies in that the classicists advocated cut in real wages through cut in money wages. They believed in the flexibility of money wages. On the other hand, Keynes held that the cut in real wages would come about through the increase in aggregate demand and employment. It is by raising aggregate demand and employment first that lower real wages are followed, not the other way around. Further, Keynes believed that money wages are not flexible, rather they are sticky downward. This rigidity of money wages may be due to a number of institutional and other factors, such as A. Powerful trade unions which are able to prevent money wages from falling at least temporarily. B. Statutory provisions such as minimum wage laws. C. Failure of employers to reduce wages due to a desire to retain loyal and experienced employees and to maintain morale. And D. Unwillingness of the unemployed workers to accept reduced money wages, even though they would be willing to work at lower real wages brought about by a rise in prices. Keynes therefore rejected a policy of flexible money wages as not only unrealistic, but also because it would cause a great instability of prices, so violent perhaps as to make business calculations futile in an economic society in which we live. Keynesian views on money wage reductions and employment. Despite his belief in the downward stickiness of wages, Keynes analyzed the impact of flexible money wages upon the consumption function, the MEC, and the rate of interest, the three principal determinants of his theory. We discuss Keynes's views on money wage reductions and employment via these determinants as under. Keynes was of the view that if reductions in money wage are not accompanied by reductions in aggregate demand, they will lead to an increase in employment. He asked, does a reduction in money wages have a direct tendency, set par, to increase employment? Set par being taken to mean that the propensity to consume, the schedule of marginal efficiency of capital, and the rate of interest are the same as before. But these variables are found to change and adversely affect aggregate demand when money wages are reduced. Keynes therefore discussed the possible effects of a general money wage cut on aggregate demand and employment through these three variables. Wage cut and propensity to consume. According to Keynes, the effect of a general cut in money wages on the propensity to consume will be unfavorable. As a result of wage reductions, incomes of the wage-earning classes will fall in relation to that of non-wage earners, and there will be some redistribution of income in favor of the latter. This will decrease total consumption, since the incomes of the wage earners have a propensity to consume fall. The rich, on the other hand, have a high propensity to save and a low propensity to consume. This causes a decline in aggregate demand, income, and employment. This is called Keynes's redistributive effect. Piggio, however, considered the possibility when money wage reductions may raise the propensity to consume. He argued that as a consequence of general wage cut, prices will fall and the value of money will rise. With the rise in the value of money, the real value of money assets such as stocks, shares, bank deposits, government bonds and securities, etc. will rise. The owners of these fixed assets will feel themselves richer than before, and their propensity to consume will be strengthened and the propensity to save weakened. This is known as the Piggio effect, which will tend to increase aggregate demand and employment. The Piggio effect fails to increase the propensity to consume much due to three reasons. First, very few people possess money assets. So the influence on the overall propensity to consume is very insignificant. Page 290. Second, it is not necessary that asset holders may at once increase their propensity to consume with the rise in the real value of their money assets. Rather, their desire to save may increase. Third, the stimulating effect of larger real cash balances on consumption may be offset by the discouraging effect of increased real debt burden on consumption due to lower prices, and thus leave the net effect very small. To take Keynes's redistributive effect and the Piggio effect together, we find that Keynes's redistributive effect is stronger than Piggio effect, and the overall effect is a fall in the propensity to consume. This is due to the fact that the redistributive effect tends to reduce mass consumption, whereas the Piggio effect raises the consumption of only the asset holders, whose number is very small. Thus, the net result of a general wage cut is to reduce the propensity to consume, aggregate demand, income, and employment. Wage cut and the MEC. A general wage cut is bound to influence the MEC, investment, and employment through business expectations. If a wage cut leads to expectations of further reductions in wages, the MEC will fall because entrepreneurs will postpone their investment plans till they are sure that wages have fallen to the lowest level. This will have an unfavorable effect on employment. But if they do not expect wages to fall further, to expect them to be higher in future, the MEC will be favorably affected. Entrepreneurs will plan to invest more and thus employment will increase. But wage reductions may adversely affect the MEC if trade unions oppose cut in money wages by resorting to strikes. It will lead to unrest and a fall in business expectations and the MEC. No entrepreneur will be prepared to invest under such conditions. Labor psychology thus plays an important part in offsetting otherwise favorable expectations. Moreover, a fall in prices due to wage reductions will increase the real burden of private debt and adversely affect business expectations, MEC, and investment. Similarly, with falling prices, the real burden of public debt will also increase and the government may levy new taxation to repay the debt and service charges. This will again have a depressing effect on investment and employment. In an open system, when prices of export goods fall due to a wage cut, exports will increase and a rise in entrepreneurs' expectations will increase investment. But this is only possible if other countries do not cut wages. We may conclude that, taking account of the actual practices and institutions of the contemporary world, a stable wage policy is likely to have more favorable effect on business expectations than a flexible policy under which wages would drift downward by easy stages as unemployment increased. Note 1. A. H. Hansen, A Guide to Keynes, page 177. Wage cut and the interest rate. Reductions in money wage rate will have a favorable effect on the level of investment and employment by lowering the rate of interest. When prices fall due to a general wage cut, the demand for money for transactions and precautionary motives will fall and for speculative motive increase. Thus, more money will be available for speculative motive and the rate of interest would fall. If the investment demand curve is interest elastic, a lower interest rate would tend to increase the level of investment and employment. This process of increase in investment and employment via reduction in wages and rate of interest is called the Keynes effect. The extent to which wage cuts will reduce the rate of interest and affect favorably investment and employment depends upon the amount of wage reductions. If wage reductions are moderate, they may prove inadequate in lowering the rate of interest so as to encourage investment. On the other hand, an immoderate reduction in wages might create political and social unrest through trade union opposition, cause unfavorable business expectations, and bring a fall in investment and a rise in liquidity preference. Thus, the effect of a wage cut on investment and employment via the interest rate does not lead to a definite conclusion. Keynes therefore favored a flexible money policy to a flexible wage policy to increase investment and employment. The rate of interest can be lowered by an expansion in money supply by the monetary authority, keeping money wages intact. A flexible wage policy in the form of a general wage cut has certain practical difficulties. Such a policy would be vehemently opposed by trade unions and cause a great instability of prices, so violent perhaps as to make business calculations futile. It will make the maintenance of continuous full employment impossible. Moreover, it will tend to increase the real burden of private and public debt with its adverse effects on investment. The same results can, however, be achieved by a flexible money policy without the adverse effects of a flexible wage policy. Keynes was thus justified in saying that only a foolish person would prefer a flexible wage policy to a flexible money policy. Page 291. The Keynes effect. Note, student should also study the PGO effect. The process of increase in investment and employment via reduction in money wages and interest rate is called the Keynes effect. Keynes maintained that as money wages and prices fall, money incomes also fall, which means increase in real output and incomes. People will therefore need less money for transactions and precautionary purposes. Assuming no change in the supply of money, this means that people have more money in liquid form than they need. It will increase the demand for money for speculative purposes. They will therefore invest surplus money in purchasing securities and bonds. The increase in the demand for such financial assets will raise their prices, which will reduce the rate of interest. Falling interest rate in turn will raise investment, national income, and employment. But Keynes did not believe that a policy of flexible wages and prices can lead to full employment. It can only lead to underemployment equilibrium. Keynes suggested two factors that may prevent the economy from reaching the level of full employment via wage-price flexibility and thus break down the Keynes effect. First, in the beginning with the reduction in money wages and prices, the demand for money may fall and lead to falling interest rate. But when the interest rate reaches a very low level, the liquidity trap may operate. Second, if investment is quite insensitive or inelastic to a fall in the rate of interest. In other words, if the slope of the MEI curve is very steep, even a substantial reduction in the rate of interest will have little effect on investment. Further, the extent to which the wage cuts will reduce the interest rate and increase investment and employment depends upon the amount of wage reductions. If wage reductions are moderate, they may be inadequate in lowering the rate of interest. On the other hand, an immoderate reduction in wages might create social unrest through trade union opposition and cause unfavorable business expectations, thereby bring about a fall in investment. Keynes concluded that there is therefore no ground for the belief that a flexible wage policy is capable of maintaining a state of continuous full employment. The economic system cannot be made self-adjusting along these lines. The Keynes effect is illustrated in figure 3A and B. So trying to explain the figures, panel A, we have income on the x-axis and interest rate on the y-axis. Then we have the LM curve, which is parallel to the x-axis up to a certain point, and then it is a rising curve as we move towards the right. There are two more LM curves. One is LM1 and the other is LM2, such that LM1 is to the right of LM and LM2 is to the right of LM1. We have the IS curve. IS curve intersects LM, LM1 and LM2 at E, E1 and E2 respectively. Corresponding to E, E1 and E2, the interest rates are R, R1 and R2 and incomes are Y, Y1 and Y2. So there is another interest rate RF marked, which is lesser than R2, and corresponding to RF, if we consider the IS curve, the income is YF. A similar diagram, which is the extension of the panel A, is panel B. We have the AD curve, which is a very fast dropping straight line curve as we move towards the right, which becomes parallel to the y-axis at a certain point. The income is on the x-axis and price level is on the y-axis. So corresponding to y, y1 and y2, there are points marked on the price level. Corresponding to y, the price level is P4. Corresponding to y1 is P3. Corresponding to y2 is P2. After y2 income level, the curve is parallel to the y-axis. There is a fourth price level, P1, marked again on the parallel portion of the AD curve. Returning to the text, the original equilibrium level in the economy is depicted by the intersection of IS and LM curves at point E with R equal to Y combination of interest rate and income level and P4 price level. Consider a position when the money wage rate falls and the price level is reduced to P3 in panel B of the figure. This increases the real supply of money and shifts the LM curve in panel A to the right to LM1, where it intersects the IS curve at point E1. This point is associated with lower interest rate R1 and higher income level Y1. A further fall in the price level to P2 shifts the LM curve from LM1 to LM2, thereby creating a new equilibrium point with the IS curve at E2. This reduces the interest rate to R2 and raises income to Y2. But a further fall in money wage rate and the price level will not reduce the interest rate below R2 because the IS curve cuts the LM2 curve in the liquidity trap. Further reduction in the price level will continue to release money from transaction balances, but this money will be absorbed in speculative balances without further reducing the interest rate. Thus, no amount of wage price reduction will be able to raise income to the full employment level YF. By lowering the interest rate to RF level as shown in panel A of the figure. The figure in the panel B shows that with every fall in the price level, the real value of money supply rises, which lowers the interest rate and raises the level of investment and income. So the aggregate demand curve AD is negatively sloped up to the price level P2. But in the liquidity trap, a further fall in the money wage rate leads to a proportionate fall in the price level so that there is no change in investment, income and employment. This is depicted in panel B of the figure by the vertical position of the AD curve when the price level falls from P2 to P1 and the level of income remains constant at Y2. Page 292. Its criticisms. The Keynes effect has been criticized by Hansen, Patinkin and other economists on the following grounds. 1. Ignores other factors. Patinkin has criticized Keynes for confining the effects of money wage reduction only in the transactions and precautionary cash balances and making the speculative demand for money depend only on the interest rate. This has led to three weaknesses in this analysis of wage price flexibility. A. Real balance effect. Keynes overlooked the real balance effect on consumption and on the demand for money. According to Hansen, there is no evidence that Keynes ever thought of the Piggio effect. It had been stated only vaguely in the long controversy prior to the appearance of the general theory about the consequences of declining prices. Patinkin observes in this connection, it seems likely that Keynes did recognize the influence of wealth on consumption or other savings, but thought of this influence only in the terms of non-monetary assets. B. Money illusion. Keynes assumed money illusion in the speculative demand for money. According to Patinkin, the Keynesian monetary theory never permits the speculative demand for money to absorb increased supply of money except at a lower interest rate. When wage price deflation leads to increase in the supply of money, the fall in the rate of interest builds a money illusion into the speculative demand for money. C. Price level expectations. Keynes neglected the influence of price level expectations on the demand for money. His analysis is based on a once and for all reduction in money wages and prices, which does not give rise to any expectations of further reduction in wages and prices. In practice, one wage price reduction often leads to further reductions, and such pessimistic expectations will adversely affect investment decisions. 2. Liquidity trap, an extreme case. Keynes's notion of the liquidity trap is an extreme case because that could occur only during a deep depression. Since there has been no depression of the type of the Great Depression, economists no longer worry about the liquidity trap and they even doubt its existence. However, some followers of Keynes hold the view that the liquidity trap exists at a zero interest rate because no lender would lend at a negative interest rate. 3. Investment not insensitive to interest rate. Patinkin does not agree with Keynes that wage price flexibility will not lead to full employment if investment is completely insensitive to a fall in interest rate. According to him, even if the saving and investment fluctuations are completely insensitive to change in interest rate, a wage reduction will still be stimulatory through its effect on real balances and will lead to full employment. Moreover, it is not possible to predict the net result of these redistribution effects on aggregate investment or consumption expenditure. Creditors might increase their expenditure due to gains and debtors might reduce it due to losses. So the net effect on aggregate expenditure of investment or consumption is unpredictable. 4. Adverse effects of wage price deflation. The policy of wage price deflation is likely to lead to serious distributional effects on debtors and creditors unless the terms of indebtedness are not changed in conformity with lower wages and prices. When money wages and prices are reduced, the real value of monetary debt will increase. As a result, creditors will become rich and debtors will become poor to the extent of the debt. 5. Wage price deflation, a theoretical possibility. Keynes himself regarded the policy of wage price deflation for expanding employment as only a theoretical possibility, for there are many institutional barriers to wage reductions. In reality, wage cuts reduce money incomes and expenditures of wage earners. They lead to reduction in output, employment and income rather than the other way around. 6. Wage price deflationary process observed. According to Hansen, the wage price deflationary process to raise employment is patently absurd. If what is wanted is more money and more liquid assets relative to income, the obvious method to achieve this result is through monetary policy. Keynes himself asserted that a flexible wage price policy was incapable of maintaining continuous full employment. He therefore favored a flexible monetary policy to a flexible wage policy. Flexible wage policy versus flexible monetary policy. Keynes did not agree with the classical economists that full employment could be achieved by a flexible wage policy. He favored a flexible monetary policy to a flexible wage policy due to certain practical difficulties involved in following the latter policy. In order to discuss Keynes's view on the issue, it is instructive to study briefly the classical view. Page 293. The classical economists believed that there was always full employment in the economy. Unemployment was due to wage rigidity. So a general cut in money wages would move the economy to the full employment level. The argument is that in a competitive economy, a money wage cut will reduce cost of production and prices. A fall in prices will increase demand and sales of products, thereby necessitating the employment of more labor. This process will ultimately lead the economy to the full employment level. The classical argument is based on the assumption that a change in money wage rate is related directly and proportionately to real wages. So, when money wages are reduced, the real wages are reduced to the same extent. Keynes did not agree with the classicists that a cut in money wage rate is essential to attain full employment. He objected to the policy of downward flexibility of money wages on the following grounds. According to Keynes, a general cut in money wages reduces employment rather than increasing it. A cut in money wages reduces the money incomes of workers who reduce their demand for products. This will lead to decline in aggregate demand, output, and employment. Further, when wages of workers alone are reduced, their income falls in relation to that of non-wage earners. As the propensity to consume of the workers is high and that of non-wage earners low, the aggregate consumption will decline. This will cause a decline in aggregate demand, output, and employment. Again, a general cut in money wages is bound to adversely affect the MEC, investment and employment, in the economy. If businessmen expect wages to fall further with a wage cut, the MEC will fall and businessmen will postpone their investment plans. This will adversely affect employment. Moreover, if trade unions oppose cut in the money wage rate by resorting to strikes, the MEC will fall again. This is because labor unrest will lead to fall in business expectations, and the MEC, businessmen will be hesitant to invest under such conditions, thereby adversely affecting employment. Keynes did not favor a flexible wage policy in the form of a cut in money wages on certain practical grounds also. According to him, such a policy would be opposed by trade unions. They would not accept an all-around reduction in money wages. In democratic countries where collective bargaining is permissible, reduction in money wages is an impracticable possibility. It is therefore much easier to follow a flexible monetary policy than a flexible wage policy. Further, social justice requires that money wages of workers alone should not be cut. A cut in money wages of workers, while keeping the incomes of other sections of the community are unchanged, would lower the standard of living of the former relative to the latter. Social justice demands that all classes of society should be treated equally and workers alone should not suffer due to cut in their money wages. That is why Keynes preferred a policy of increasing the money supply in depression to a policy of cut in money wages, because it would affect the real incomes of all sections as prices increase. Last but not the least, when prices fall due to a cut in money wages, they increase the real burden of debt on debtors. Since the majority of debtors are businessmen, such a policy will adversely affect business expectations, MEC, investment, output, and employment. On the other hand, a policy of increasing the supply of money would reduce the burden of debt because it would increase the price level. The so-called Keynes effect, which Keynes put forth in favor of a policy of cutting money wages, was simply meant to analyze the possibility of increasing investment and employment via reduction in wages and interest rate. But he did not think that a policy of cut in money wage rates with an unchanged money supply was likely to be of much practical importance, because it was incapable of achieving full employment due to the liquidity trap. According to Keynes, the economic system cannot be made self-adjusting along these lines. Moreover, a flexible wage policy involves high social costs and is impracticable. He therefore pointed out that the same result could be obtained from a rise in the money supply and unchanged money wage rates. In other words, a policy of increasing the supply of money can lead to increase in employment by lowering the interest rate, like the policy of a cut in money wages. Such a policy is not only realistic but also involves far less social costs. Thus, Keynes favored a flexible monetary policy of increasing the money supply in order to raise employment, keeping money wages unchanged. Keynes wrote in this connection, "Having regard to human nature and our institutions, it can only be a foolish person who would prefer a flexible wage policy to a flexible money policy, unless he can point to advantages from the former which are not obtainable from the latter." Page 294. Selected readings. J. M. Keynes, The General Theory of Employment, Interest and Money, 1936. A. H. Hansen, A Guide to Keynes, 1953, Chapter 10. Edward Shapiro, Macroelectronic Analysis, 4th edition, 1978, Chapter 16. T. F. Dunberg and D. M. McDougall, Macroeconomics, 5th edition, 1976. Don Patinkin, Money, Interest and Prices, 2nd edition, 1965. Exercises. Question 1. Trace the effects of a cut in money wages on level of employment, bringing out in your answer the viewpoints of classical economists and the Keynesians. 2. Compare the classical and Keynesian positions in regard to the relationship between wage flexibility and full employment. 3. Unemployment equilibrium can occur only if money wages are inflexible downward. Discuss critically this assessment of Keynes's contribution to the theory of employment. 4. Discuss critically the Keynes effect. And 5. Only a foolish person would prefer a flexible wage policy to a flexible money policy. Discuss this statement. With this, we come to the end of chapter 36. We have also reached the end of part 4.